Good to see each of you here tonight. We're glad that you made plans to come back and be with us. And I'm hopeful that our study together, and I know our study together from God's Word, can be beneficial to each one of us. We're studying in the Old Testament, kind of giving an overview of the books of the Old Testament, an outline prepared tonight for Book of Judges and Ruth, study guide for those two books together. I kind of debated with myself, but some who had studied the books had included both of them in their study, so I followed that particular guide and pulled information from various and sundry sources, mostly from the Bible, you might say. Hopefully agrees with the Bible. But I used some outlines by Brother Hopper, Joe Hopper, and also some outlines from Brother Shelley, Ruben Shelley, back in the day when he was straight up with everything. There's a book that Wayman gave me that has the old Shelley versus the new Shelley. And it was a little bit interesting. Some of those books, though, just deal with controversy, and sometimes it's beneficial, sometimes it's not. But anyway, he has an excellent two excellent studies on the entire book of the entire Old Testament, book by book, and the entire New Testament, book by book. And you don't find that much, but he has a good study, good approach in it as far as I can. Brother Hopper does too. Brother Hopper gets some of his information the same place Brother Shelley does. And so I figure I can steal from both of them, kind of bring it all together, and you have the benefit of their expertise and the scriptures and my kind of putting it together. Adaptation. This is from Brother Hopper's book on A Year with the Bible. In Genesis, we saw man ruined by sin. In Exodus, we saw man redeemed by blood. In Leviticus, we saw man worshiping God. Because you had the priesthood system and the tabernacle. And in Numbers, we saw man serving God. In Deuteronomy, we saw man remembering the past and looking forward to the future. So those are the first five, known as the Pentateuch of many. And then we looked at Joshua. We saw man resting in possession of the promised land. They now were in Canaan. Moses had died. And Moses, my servant, has died, I think is what the way the Bible mentions it. Prior to crossing the Jordan River and going into the land of Canaan. So in Judges, we see man disobedient, and we see him oppressed. In Ruth, we see rest through redemption and promise. Won't be too much that we'll look at on the book of Ruth. I would suggest the reading of it, though, and at some time when you're thinking about a book to read in the Bible. But I thought of this approach, book by book, to kind of interest all of us in a study or a restudy of the Old Testament. Sometimes we don't spend any time at some congregations on the Old Testament. And I think a study of the Old Testament is essential in your study of the New Testament. The Old Testament gives background, gives examples, and the Old Testament points the way to Christ. You read the New Testament, what you do is you're coming right into the first century and Jesus is there. But Jesus was there in the beginning. You hear John say, in the beginning was the Word. What's he talking about? He created what? You read about the creation back in the book of Genesis. Two books of Ruth by some have, like I said, or studied it together, because they do apply, it seems like, to the same period of history. The Jews in their traditions, in the Talmud, attribute both of these to the same author. We'll mention that in a minute. Judges tells a gloomy story because it's kind of a downtime for the people of God. They're back in the same framework of mind that they were on the, in the, Exodus itself. Unfaithfulness. And they're disobedient. They have social chaos. There's oppression and deliverance and apostasy just again and again. This was kind of the way with the Jews. I've seen it. I saw it in some families as I was growing up, how we'd have a meeting, a gospel meeting. Someone would come, quote, forward during the gospel meeting, and that would last maybe a month or two, and they're gone. They don't come back maybe until somebody invites them to the next gospel meeting. And that gets them all riled up, and then they're gone again. That's basically the way I see some of the people of God in the Old Testament. And I think it helps us to study that, because we have to watch ourselves lest we repeat the same error, lest we get into the same rut that they did, and we forget God while we're trying to be like folks around us. That was the biggest problem that we're going to find that's talked about here in the book of Judges. Ruth tells a story of devotion, of love and faithfulness in midst of all the stuff that's happening in the period of the Judges. Ruth was named for, of course, the Moabite woman who's the central figure. She's not a Jew initially. She don't guess she ever becomes a Jew, but she does accept the religion, and we'll look at that later too, the religion of Naomi, the Jewish religion. But we see her devotion, her love, her loyalty, her faithfulness to her family, especially to that mother-in-law. The book of Judges is named for a series of leaders that we see coming forth. This is from the period of Joshua to the times of the kings, beginning with, of course, Saul. And I think in Shelley's book, he says there were 12 judges, or 15, and Hopper says 12. They may both be right. It may be that Hopper stopped counting before Shelley did. And he counted two or three other people that we might speak of as influential prophets, and he refers to them as judges. But these judges were set up initially as military leaders, and then as time went on, they became civil leaders to lead the people in all regards other than just militaristically. Now, it has nothing to do with the type of judges that we have today. In other words, they didn't set up in a court system. They may have made decisions, something like that, but they were almost in the situation of a king or a patriarch, or not a patriarch, but a king situation, a situation where there was one ruler, although they made decisions. Some of them made good decisions, others didn't. The book of Judges covers a period of 300 years, and it's thought to have been in the, of course, it is from Joshua to the time of Samuel. If there was one sentence summary, as I ran through two or three different places, and I was reading again this afternoon, or reading maybe for the first time this afternoon, Unger's Old Testament and New Testament summary of the Bible. And he says there are 7 apostasies, 7 servitudes, and 7 heathen nations, and 7 deliverances, all those 7s, again and again, up and down, God's people were during that period of time. And we see it repeated. It may have happened to some of us in our lifetime, but I'm sure it happened to Ken folks, and it's happened to other members of this congregation over a period of time. that you see them faithful for a while or appear to be faithful for a while, and then they're out the door and you don't see them for several months or several years, and then they come back or they're going to church somewhere else and slacking off from time to time. Purpose of the book, and I've gotten down two. To record the unfaithfulness. Have I got that in the outline? Some of the things are in the outline and some are not because of lack of space. I don't have that in there. So this is a bonus. That test Jerry wants me to give to him and Judy. Boy, he's really setting her up. Wants me to give him back. Was I going to give a test? I said, well, I wasn't, but I will. You know, if you want me to give you one next week. But anyway, we won't do that. To record the unfaithfulness of God's people, Israel, and to contrast their faithfulness, contrast the faithfulness that God had to them in keeping his promise that they would be in the land of Canaan. And that he would help them to overcome the people that were in the land. And number two, to record the major events of the history of God's people from the time of Joshua to the time of the monarchy, time of the beginning of the monarchy with Saul as king. Now the background, you do have some of my notes on the background. Authors thought to be Samuel, who is in the later part of this time period, 1385 to 1050, it's thought. That varies somewhat, but seemed like most people were about in that approximate date. And the book of Ruth, it suggested that was likely written sometime around 1000 B.C. So hopefully, when you check that out, that Samuel was alive during that period of time to write it. Evidently, that would correlate to that. It relates an incident, and if you looked at the genealogies, especially the one in Matthew, you'll see, and we'll look at it in a few minutes, you'll see that Ruth is in that genealogy. Ruth is and I have to look at my notes for that, was David's great-grandmother. Ruth was David's great-grandmother, and consequently, in the lineage of Christ, in that line. So it's interesting, of course, that she's in the Bible, and likely for that reason. Joshua's death, Israel was in Canaan, and in process of taking full possession. But there were unconquered tribes, and they needed to be conquered. And therein lies the problem. Let's look at the book of Judges, chapter 1, verses 1 through 4. I think I have that note in your... Maybe I don't. There's another bonus. How about that? Two of them tonight. You got your trusty pencil? You can pencil that in. Now, after the death of Joshua, it came to pass that the children of Israel asked the Lord, saying, who shall go up for us against the Canaanites first to fight against them? First to fight against them. And the Lord said, Judah shall go up. Behold, I have delivered the land into his hand. And Judah said unto Simeon, his brother, come up with me. Now, this is the tribes, not just two people. I'm sure you knew that. But come up with me into my lot, that we may fight against the Canaanites. And I likewise will go with thee into thy lot. In other words, when you have the opportunity and the privilege and responsibility of fighting against some of the Canaanites, then we'll help you guys. So Simeon went with him, and Judah went up, and the Lord delivered the Canaanites and the Perizzites into the hand. And they slew of them in Bezek 10,000 men. Now, that didn't occur very often, though, during that time. Just every once in a while, it seems like. Let's look. Israel didn't obey God. And this is going to hang heavy over their heads for many generations. So let's look at Judges chapter 1, verse 21. Several verses right there in a row, we're going to skip some. And the children of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites. All these ites lived here. People. They inhabited Jerusalem, but the Jebusites dwell with the children of Benjamin in Jerusalem to this day, according to whoever was writing to the point, the time that he wrote. I left out verse 19, but we won't read that. Verse 27. Neither did Manasseh, this is another one of the tribes, drive out the inhabitants of Bethshean and the towns, nor Taanach and her towns, nor the inhabitants of Deor-Ador and her towns, nor the inhabitants of these other places. But the Canaanites would dwell in the land. That's not good. That's not good. Verse 30 and 31. Neither did Zebulun, another tribe, drive out the inhabitants of Kitron, nor the inhabitants of Naphtali. But the Canaanites dwelt among them and became tributaries. That is, they kind of reported to and were subservient to the people of Zebulun. But I imagine that didn't happen, kinship, so to speak, or that position very long. Neither did Asher drive out the inhabitants of the various cities it mentions, Echo and the inhabitants of Zidon and Alab, and etc. Verse 32, but the Asherites dwelt among the Canaanites, the inhabitants of the land, for they did not drive them out. Verse 33, neither did Naphtali, another tribe, drive out the inhabitants of Beth-Shemesh, nor the inhabitants of Bethanah, but he dwelt among the Canaanites, the inhabitants of the land. Nevertheless, the inhabitants of these places became tributaries unto them, reported to them. So it doesn't look like the people are waiting too long to say, God, we're not obedient to you. We're not going to follow what you said, what you specifically commanded. Maybe they didn't see things. Maybe they're like us. We wonder, well, why would God tell them to do it? You know, it seemed like friendly people, but God told them to drive them out. God told them to drive them out. And we're going to see in the book of Judges that as to why he told them to do that. Okay, next let's look at lessons from Judges and Ruth. Lessons from Judges and Ruth. One of the verses we want to look to first is when everyone does right in his own eyes. That's a concept of the Old Testament, and that seems to be a concept that people like to follow today. But that's not a concept that's pleasing to God. The Bible stresses that man is unable to direct his own way as far as his spiritual life is concerned. Not as far as his everyday life is concerned. And you know, most of these people today, talking about God and the state, they got God's position with man all mixed up. When this country was founded, God was very much present in their thoughts. I was just listening to a fellow on the radio on the way in, and he's telling about, that, of course, it's been July 4th. Telling about a preacher, of course they called him pastor, but a preacher from back in 1775 when they initially went into conference, or maybe it was in 1776 when they wrote the Declaration of Independence. But they started off that meeting with a reading of the 35th Psalm. And then the man who was a member of the Anglican Church, which was Church of England, that preacher, instead of reading what the designated, a lot of these churches have designated psalms you got to read and designated prayers you got to pray. Well, he tossed that aside on that day, and he had his own prayer. And he said everybody was moved. Everybody was moved. Everybody, in fact, he says they fell down on their knees and cried because of the prayer. Because they've been hearing these these warmed over prayers that were being heard everywhere, and they knew it. Some of the song books and some of the religious groups today have got prayers in the song books. But these preachers, or many of the churches, pastors as they call them, or bishops or whatever, they have handed down to them through the hierarchy what they should pray for, pray about, and what they should be teaching on that day. And this man said that suggested he wasn't going to do that. And that was that spirit of independence showing through not only but those to the men who were there politically, but to this individual who was there to give them some spiritual guidance. And they welcomed that guidance. In Judges 17, verse 6, book says, in those days there was no king in Israel, but every man did that which was right in his own eyes. Those words are similar to Jeremiah 10:23, when Jeremiah said, Lord, I know that the way of man is not in himself. It's not in man that walketh to direct his steps. Now, in Proverbs 16:25, the writer of Proverbs, probably Solomon on this one, 16:25, there's a way that seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. One page back in my Bible, Proverbs 14:12, there's a way which seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. Solomon thought that was an important concept, an important principle to get across. Jesus, or God, when he said, this is my beloved son in whom I'm well pleased, hear ye him, he was telling folks, you need direction. In times past, God spoke to the people by Moses and other prophets. Of course, they didn't follow them either. And they wound up, getting God's wrath against them. But we need, as men and women, we need clearly defined order and authority in our lives. And that's one of the problems we see coming upon our country now. It's difficult, I'm sure, for teachers to teach at school because of the lack of authority that they have and the lack of respect for authority. And a lot of that is because of the pitiful situation that we find in the homes that these children come from. Situations where there's a wife and a wife and a husband and two people that are not married that have three or four kids, and one of these days they may decide to get married or not. Well, I wish that that the women who do that would realize the problems and the difficulties they're going to have in the future. Because of that kind of, there's no responsibility taken there. God set up certain roles, and responsibilities. Ephesians 6, 1 through 4 speaks to that as the Apostle Paul writes the church at Ephesus and talks about the children's responsibility to the parents and parents' responsibility in dealing with the children. Ephesians 6, 1 through 4. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Well, some children don't even have parents. They have parent. It's difficult for one parent to get out and work and have the oversight of a child. Or they put the child in the care of someone who doesn't have any kids, or who it's like my age, they shouldn't be caring for kids that are their grandkids a lot of times. And that's done where there's not enough contact with mama and daddy a lot of times. And if there's a wrong kind of direction that's given by that surrogate parent, given the care, then there could be difficulty. Honor thy father and thy mother. Some folks don't have a father to honor. A lot of kids don't. So they're not going to honor the principal. They're not going to honor the teacher. They're not going to honor the coach. They're not going to honor the policeman. They're not going to honor you as a human being. And hopefully they are teaching that, some of that in schools. He says, you know, do this, this is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee and thou mayest live long on the earth. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Some homes are without fathers. Some homes are without responsible fathers who have fathers, who take it upon themselves to direct the children within that home. As far, and I think of that especially as far as the spiritual lives of those children. I pray for my boys that they will lead that home spiritually. Many times we find that the women are more spiritually minded though than the men. And so if any leadership in the spiritual area is to be there, then the women have to do it. And that's usurping what God's plan has designed. This being the 4th of July, our nation has a president. Sometimes I probably don't honor him like I should. We've got into a habit in this country where it doesn't matter who's president, if we're not going to show the proper respect, but the respect should be shown to the office and to that president. Guess what? Romans 13 is still there. Romans 13 is still there. And Romans 13 tells us that every soul be subject unto the higher powers, whether we like it or not. Whether we like it or not. For there is no power but of God, the powers that are ordained of God. Sometimes I don't understand it, but there has to be rule. And where there is no rule, there's chaos. Saw a situation on TV today. It was on the Discovery Channel where a man had gone over to India. I guess he got tired of hearing about these outsourcing of jobs. And so he was a customer service representative, I guess. He went over there for a month. And he kind of saw the other side of the picture. He saw that those who were customer service representatives, as he was, had a pretty good life over there. I think he stayed with one of the families. But they had janitors and they had other people there helping and whatever. And he went out, he said, I think I'll go out and see where they live. They lived in squalor. They lived in tents. And of course, over in India, in some of those towns, they got monkeys and cows that are in charge because of the Hindu religion. They're not in charge of the fact that they're judging, but you can't do anything to a cow. I mean, you can't move her out of your way. And if a monkey comes down and steals your banana, you just got lost your banana. And not much you can do about it unless the only monkey catcher in the town finds that, delinquent monkey. We're to honor whether we have a king, whether we have a president, whether we have a governor. The authority is from God. Spiritual life, the authority is from God. 2 Timothy 3:16, 17 is still there. This Bible is what I like to call, and I think I mentioned in the notes you got, it's our instruction book. It's the instruction book that comes with man. You know, a lot of times we fuss at when we become parents that there's no instruction book when that kid's born. You know, here's how I want to be taken care of. Here's the instruction book. This is how to put me together for the next 18 years. Now, there are books written by various and sundry people, but they'll deviate. But the Bible says something about that it being an instruction book. All scriptures give them inspiration of God, and it's profitable. It's profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction. For instruction in righteousness, King James says, that the man of God may be perfect or mature or whole or complete, truly furnished, completely furnished or equipped unto all good works. So that which equips us for life, not just for eternal life, but for life, is God's Word. Now, a lot of people don't recognize that. And they would say, you're radical. But that's what God's Word says. The book of Judges shows what happens when humans follow their own personal desires, their own personal taste, and our own individual goals, and leave God out of the picture. Submission to authority is important today, but it's a neglected subject in many homes. Because I'd like to go back and teach some now in the accounting area or finance or something like that. I'd maybe go take some courses or whatever. They've got a way that somebody with my background and hopefully, I don't know whether with my memory, but with my background can teach school with maybe with a couple of weeks of intense training, and then takes about 40 hours, I think it is, of continuing education during a period of maybe the first year of teaching. But I wouldn't even want to try it. I wouldn't want to try it because I don't think that the kids would listen to me, because I don't think I could handle the situation when somebody talked back to me. That just, if I was shown no respect, and I know that they're probably people my age and with a different temperament, they could perhaps do it. But like old Alan Jackson says, where I come from, there's cornbread and taters, and there was discipline. And it was pretty tough discipline, too. Second point here, second lesson, we'll get through it a little faster. Insight into God's fierce anger against the people of Canaan. Why is God so angry against these people of the land which his people were to go? Well, let's look at that. See if Judges shed some light. When God gave the land of Canaan to the people of Israel, well, it was, I mean, here you got two million people initially, I think, and probably there were about 2 million people, because people had been born on the way, and if you notice the count, anytime you notice the count in the first five books of the Bible, I don't know whether both of the counts are in the book of Numbers, I think it is, two different countings. The fighting men number somewhat the same. Now, whether they still have approximately, a couple million people, 2-3 million people, I don't know, as they had in the beginning, because so many people died off, but they had aged 40 years and they'd had kids along the way. So, you know, a lot of things were happening. They had a lot of funerals to go to in those 40 years. And a lot of births. So here was 2 million people, or approximately that many, on the border of going into this country, and they didn't have any place to live. Unless they could take my house, or your house. And that's the way God set it up. Don't ask me to explain. Job wanted to know that too, and if you read the last four, like I mentioned before, if you read the last four chapters of Job, you'll find out that God said that some of his ways were beyond understanding. But he told his people to utterly destroy the people in that land. Let's look at Deuteronomy 20, 16 through 18. Deuteronomy 20, 16 through 18, I got it marked. But the cities of these people, which the Lord thy God doth give thee for an inheritance, thou shalt save alive nothing that breathes. How many else would that exclude? Not any of us. Some may be breathing better than others, but it says if you breathe, you are to be utterly destroyed. That means they're going to kill them. But thou shalt utterly destroy them, namely the Hittites, Amorites, Canaanites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites, and the Lord thy God hath commanded thee. Why? That they teach you not to do after all their abominations. It was almost like the flood. God saw wickedness, and he wanted wickedness destroyed. And these people were wicked people. God saw them as wicked people. He saw them as stumbling blocks. He saw them as temptation to his people. His solution was to get rid of them. We probably could have had a committee that might have come up with a better idea. Well, no, they wouldn't have come up with a better idea because this is God's idea. That they teach you not to do after all their abominations which they've done unto their gods. So should ye sin against the Lord your God. God knew what was going to happen. That they teach you not all their abominations which they've done of their gods. They're going to lead you down the wrong path. God didn't want his people to partake of the evil around them. As we study the book of Judges, we're now in a position to see why God commanded them to do what he did. He told them to utterly destroy them. We see in the book of Judges, they didn't do it, and God is very displeased. In 1 Corinthians 15:33, the Revised Standard Version says, "Be not deceived, bad company ruins good morals." It still holds true today. Now, we don't go around killing everybody just because they're abomination before God. But we best not spend a lot of time with them. Because guess what? We're going to pick up some bad habits. No, one time we had a boy that was a, quote, member of the church. And he was at, and I think I've mentioned to you before, I've mentioned it before some congregation. But he'd been in the state training school at Joronia. I'd been over there and I'd taught him for a while. And he got out. Well, he came back, no, he didn't escape. He got out at regular time when he had done his time. When he got out, then he somehow, he came to church with us, and then we went to one of the drive-ins back there in the 50s. And before you know it, he's out there throwing pie at somebody or throwing food at somebody and starting ruckus. I told whoever was riding with me, we're leaving. Now, that boy, I see now why he got in trouble. And he's going to get into trouble again, and if we're hanging around him, we're going to get in trouble too. And so we left. And I don't think I saw him much after that. I just didn't think, even though he, quote, called himself a member of the church, we were young. And some of the group may have been impressed by what they saw in him. In fact, some of them were. But when God told them, you go in there and you utterly destroy the people, they did not do that. They embraced the immorality and the gods of the people around them, and that caused their downfall. That caused their unfaithfulness. And in his all-knowing power, God knew it would happen. God knew it would happen in advance. He knew it. And the Israelites' unfaithfulness would torment them and would cause them unending grief throughout many generations of people. Loyalty of a daughter-in-law. Daughter-in-law to her mother-in-law. The book of Ruth, this is number 3 on there. The book of Ruth, we're introduced to Ruth. How about that? The daughter-in-law of Naomi. Now, I have to look at my notes a little bit because I'm a little bit rusty on the book of Ruth. But she's in the country of Moab, and she married, Ruth married Naomi's son, Abimelech, the tribe of Judah. So her husband died, and also her father-in-law died. Now, Ruth, though, felt like she should accompany her mother-in-law back into Israel, into their homeland. And I think they had a situation where the next of kin had a right to marry one who was whose husband had died, who was kin to them. And she married Boaz, who was a close relative, according to the King, New King James. And thus was brought into the lineage of David. And let's look at Matthew 1. I ought to be able to get that pretty fast. Right at the middle of the Bible, practically. Not quite, about 2/3 over. Book of the generation of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Now down to verse 5. This is Matthew 1, 1 and 1, 5. And Solomon begat Boaz and Rahab, and Boaz begat Obed of Ruth, and Obed begat Jesse. Now you say, I don't like to read all those begats. But notice, Jesse was David's daddy. If you go back up there, you'll see what relationship that Ruth was in that lineage. And this goes down to Christ, because it says the book of the generation of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Mentioned two most famous folks in there. But down there it mentions Ruth. And so perhaps the reason for writing about this woman in the Old Testament. In Ruth 1:16-17, we have words of love and loyalty to the mother-in-law. The mother-in-law said, Ruth, you need to go back to your mama. You need to go back to your mother's family and you know, do what you will there. She was not a Jew, and it was not incumbent on her, I guess, to do what the Jews back in there would have done. But she wanted to go with her mother-in-law and worship the God that her mother-in-law worshiped. And she said to Naomi, as Naomi said, you need to go to your mother. She said, entreat me not to leave you or return from following after thee. And you could probably sing the rest of it, or a good part of it. For whither thou goest, I will go. And where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thou people shall be my people. And the song doesn't say it, but thy God, my God. Where thou diest, will I die, and there will I be buried. In words, I vow to stay with you. I vowed to my husband that I would be his to death, but I'll be with you to my death too. There will I be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if aught but death part thee and me. Very loving, very loyal words of a daughter-in-law to her mother-in-law. Conclusion. I was reading a book about preaching. It says, don't tell anybody you're concluding. You just do it. But I'm going to tell you that, because it's getting a little bit later tonight. The time of Judges was a dark period in the history of God's people. They now occupied the land, but they disobeyed God in not utterly destroying the people there. And it caused them problem after problem. God said, I'll use these people to go up against you. And he did. I think I missed a verse somewhere that I should have read. But we'll let that go right now. We see unfaithfulness in Israel. We see disobedience of God's people to their God. And having failed to obey God, to utterly destroy the people, they now were participating in the sins of the people of the land. They're being like everybody around. Everybody else is doing it. That sounds familiar. That's what they were saying. Mama, you know, everybody's going. Everybody's doing that. And in Ruth of Moab, we see a loyalty to her remaining family that really is unparalleled when we read the Bible, as far as being loyal to a family and to God. The nation of Israel failed to learn, too. Judge after judge after judge, and time after time over these 300 periods, they would sometimes return to God, then there would be apostasy. They repeated, in these later years, they repeated the immoral and disobedient lifestyle. It becomes a lifestyle. Don't ever be fooled. And we need to learn from history ourselves that we too can be in the situation that they were, if we let down our guard, and if we, for some reason or other, decide, maybe little by little, and that's the way I see it in many people, little by little, inch by inch, they inch away from God, move a little away from God. I think each one tonight that's here is a Christian. But if you have a desire to, for our prayers on your behalf, we'd be glad to pray with you. And if there's a need for anybody to rededicate their life to Christ, whatever you need, would you come as Jerry leads us in the song that he selected, softly and tenderly.